This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Borscht Club on ORFM, where we stir up vibrant stories, rich traditions, and the voices of the Ukrainian community. Grab a seat. It's time to dive into something truly special. Вітаю! Як справи? Hello, how are you? On 28 June, Ukraine marked Constitution Day, one of the country's most important national holidays. It was on this day in 1996 that the Verkhovna Rada, Ukrainian parliament, adopted the Constitution of Independent Ukraine after almost 24 hours of continuous debate. The marathon parliamentary session has gone down in history as the Constitutional Night. In the end, 315 members of parliament voted in favor of the new constitution, comfortably exceeding the 300 votes required for its adoption. Interestingly, Constitution Day is the only public holiday that is explicitly established by the constitution itself. That alone reflects the special place the constitution holds in Ukraine's statehood. In Ukraine, the country's most important constitutional principles are all contained in a single document. It sets out how the state functions, how power is shared, what rights citizens have, and the values on which the country is built. In contrast, countries such as New Zealand rely on a number of different laws, historical documents, court decisions, and constitutional conventions rather than one single written constitution. But what exactly is a constitution and why does it matter? Simply put, a constitution is the supreme law of a country. It defines how the state functions, how power is exercised, what rights citizens have, and what limits are placed on government. Every other law must comply with the constitution. If a law contradicts it, it can be declared unconstitutional. After declaring independence in 1991, Ukraine continued for several years to operate under a heavily amended version of the 1978 Constitution of the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic. It was a legacy of the Soviet system and no longer reflected the reality of an independent democratic state. Adopting a new constitution therefore became one of the final and most important steps in establishing modern Ukraine. However, Ukraine's constitutional tradition is much older than 1996. Its roots go back to the time of Kievan Rus. One of the earliest legal codes was Ruska Pravda, or the Rus Justice, compiled during the reign of Yaroslav the Wise in the 11th century. It laid down legal principles that governed society nearly 1,000 years ago. In 1710, Hetman Pilip Orlik drafted what is now known as the Constitution of Pilip Orlik. It is widely regarded as one of the earliest constitutional documents of the modern era in Europe. The document limited the power of the Hetman, defined the rights of the Cossacks, and established principles of the separation of powers, ideas that were remarkably progressive for the early 18th century. Another important milestone came with the Constitution of the Ukrainian People's Republic in 1918. Although political events prevented it from ever fully coming into force, it set out democratic principles, recognized popular sovereignty, and guaranteed broad civil rights. Across different centuries, all of these constitutional documents shared one central idea, that Ukrainians have the right to live in their own independent state and determine their own future. The modern constitution declares Ukraine to be a sovereign, independent, democratic, social, and rule-of-law state. It also establishes that the people are the sole source of state power and that government is divided into three separate branches – legislative, executive, and judicial. This separation of powers is one of the fundamental principles of democracy, ensuring that no single institution or individual can concentrate all power in their hands. The Constitution also states that Ukraine is a unitary state, that its territory is indivisible and inviolable, and that Ukrainian is the country's sole state language. Human rights occupy a central place in the Constitution. In fact, the largest section of the document is devoted to the rights, freedoms, and responsibilities of citizens. The Constitution guarantees the right to life, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the right to education, work, social protection, and fair trial, peaceful assembly, the right to vote and stand for election, and equality before the law. One of the Constitution's most important provisions is found in Article 3, which states that the individual, their life and health, honor and dignity, inviolability and security are recognized as the highest social values in Ukraine. In other words, the state exists to serve the people, not the other way around. For the country that spent decades under a totalitarian Soviet regime, this represented a fundamental shift in political philosophy. The Constitution is also deliberately difficult to amend. It can only be changed through a special constitutional procedure requiring a qualified majority in the Verkhovna Rada, Ukrainian parliament. Amendments to certain key chapters, including those concerning the foundations of the constitutional order and the amendment process itself, must also be approved in a nationwide referendum. Moreover, the Constitution explicitly prohibits amendments that would abolish or restrict human rights, undermine Ukraine's independence, or threaten its territorial integrity. Today, the Constitution carries even greater significance because Ukraine has been defending itself against Russia's full-scale invasion for more than 4 years. A Constitution does not only protect the rights of citizens, it also limits the power of the state itself. And this is one of the defining differences between a democracy and an authoritarian regime. That is why Ukrainians are fighting not only for their cities or their borders, they are fighting for their rights to determine their own future and to live in a democratic country where human dignity, freedom, the rule of law, and human rights are respected. That is why Constitution Day is much more than the anniversary of the adoption of the country's basic law. It is a reminder of the values on which modern Ukraine is built and the values it continues to defend today. A constitution defines the character of a state, but a country is shaped not only by its laws. Above all, it's shaped by its people. And today in our studio, I'm delighted to welcome someone for whom Ukraine has become a deeply important part of her life. She lives here in Dunedin, is raising her son with a Ukrainian name, supports Ukraine, and helps New Zealanders discover Ukrainian history, culture, and traditions. It is my great pleasure to welcome Maria to the program. Maria, welcome, and thank you very much for joining us today and for agreeing to share your story. Tell us a bit about yourself. What's your story, and how did you end up in Dunedin?
Thank you for having me, first of all, Ola. My story is that I immigrated to New Zealand when I was 15 with my mother from Kharkiv in Ukraine in 2004. So I've been living in New Zealand longer than I have lived in Ukraine, and I do consider New Zealand to be my home, but I also identify as Ukrainian. I came to, first of all, to Napier with my mother, and lived with my stepfather as well, and then we moved to Wellington, where I finished high school, and then I moved to Dunedin to study at university. So I've been living in Dunedin since 2008.
That's quite a long story.
It is, yes. It's interesting because my identity as Ukrainian sort of evolved a lot and changed a lot over the last few years. So before, because I'm from Kharkiv, which is on the very east of Ukraine, with on the border with Russia. It's one of the cities of Ukraine that has been most heavily Russified. You know, it has a mostly Russian-speaking population. At least now they have been becoming more Ukrainian-speaking, but they still, many of them still speak Russian. So I was brought up as a Russian speaker, and my identity was very much a mix of Ukrainian and Russian, especially with the fact that my mom is ethnically Russian. She was born in Russia and moved to Kharkiv as a student, where she met my father. Yeah, so my identity has evolved from quite a Russified Ukrainian to just Ukrainian, especially since the full-scale invasion by Russia. I have started identifying as fully Ukrainian and stop speaking Russian and transitioned to speaking Ukrainian as much as I can.
Have you been back to Ukraine since you immigrated?
Just once in 2007, so many, many, many years ago, because I had a very small family. It was essentially just me and my mother, and my father passed away in 2010. So we didn't really have a reason to go back to Ukraine. And I had my grandparents lived in Russia back then, so we went to Russia perhaps more often to visit them. And then my family moved to Italy completely, so we didn't have a reason to go to Russia or Ukraine. I've been to Italy more times than I've been to Ukraine in the last, since I moved to New Zealand.
When you heard that Russia invaded Ukraine, what went through your mind in that moment?
I felt shock and horror. I couldn't believe it, really. I knew that there were, you know, Russian armed forces gathering on the border, but I just thought that they're trying to scare Ukraine. They're trying to intimidate. I didn't think that they were actually going to cross the border and start bombing Ukrainian cities. I remember it very clearly because my partner and I finished Copeland Track on the west coast of New Zealand. So we had a fantastic time doing this track in the beautiful countryside and experienced beautiful hot pools on Copeland Track. And then it turned out that the night that we were sitting in the hot pools, that's when Russia started its invasion of Ukraine. Full-scale invasion, that is. Crossed the border, started bombing cities. And yeah, the following day when we came out into civilization, so to speak, I found out about the invasion, and it was, you know, obviously spoiled the mood a lot, and I was immediately contacting my friends that I had in Kharkiv and trying to ascertain whether they were okay. And yeah, it took me a long time to actually come to grips with what's happening.
Do you still have family and friends in Ukraine? How do you support Ukraine from New Zealand? And what do you think is the most important way people can support Ukraine?
I think, well, yeah, first of all, I'm part of the small Ukrainian community in Dunedin. So I come to the Octagon protest vigil that we have every Saturday. And I've been doing it almost since the beginning of the full-scale invasion. And my partner comes as well, and my one-year-old son comes along as well. So we come as a family, and I really appreciate the fact that I have this Ukrainian community and friends now. It's an amazing group of people, and I feel very privileged to know everyone. And it's not just Ukrainians. I mean, like, it's a real mix of Ukrainians and Kiwis and some Germans and some people from the UK as well. So it's a real wonderful, eclectic mix of people, and they all support Ukraine. But for me, yeah, the most important thing that we can do here is not forget that this war is still happening, that the invasion is happening, and keep on talking about it, keep on donating to good causes in Ukraine if you can afford it. There is many different causes that are not necessarily lethal or military in nature. A lot of it is humanitarian support, and there are... Yeah, there are definitely many reliable funds that you can donate to. But the main thing is just talking about it and raising awareness with, you know, it's easy to forget. There's so many conflicts around the world. It's easy to forget about Ukraine. It's definitely not as prevalent in the news as it used to be a few years ago. So, which is normal. It's how it happens. But it's a very important conflict, not just for Ukraine, but for the world at large, because it can have really big consequences, repercussions, domino effect. You know, it can escalate into a much bigger conflict if Russia is not stopped.
Your son has a Ukrainian name, and I know there is a special story behind it. Would you like to share it with us?
Yeah, sure. My son is named Valery. It's an Eastern European name, Latin in origin, and I named him after my grandfather, actually, who is Russian. He's the father of my mother, but he was a very good man. I had a very good relationship with him, and he passed away in 2022. So I decided to name my son after him, but he's kind of named after two prominent Ukrainians that I really respect and admire. And one of them is Valery Zaluzhny, who is the former commander-in-chief of Ukrainian armed forces. Now he's an ambassador of Ukraine in the UK. And the other Valery is called Valery Markus, who is a serviceman. He's been a soldier since 2014, actually. He's a really long-serving veteran of this war, and He's a young guy. He's a few years younger than me, but he's very experienced and wrote a book and done a lot of cool things in his life. And I really, he is one of the key people that actually inspired me to completely transition to Ukrainian language and just completely cut ties with Russian, any leftovers of Russian culture that I had. Yeah, he was a very kind of pivotal figure in that for me. So I decided to name my son kind of in honor of those three special people.
That's such a beautiful story. If I understand correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you really started learning more about Ukraine after moving to New Zealand. What advice would you give to New Zealanders who want to learn more about Ukraine? What are the best resources, and how can someone be a bit more Ukrainian here in New Zealand?
That's a good, complicated question. Well, let me think. I mean, YouTube is a great resource. It's got, you know, tons of information if you know where to look. And it is probably the main place that where I go for Ukrainian content. There's been an explosion of Ukrainian YouTube channels, Ukrainian content, since the full-scale invasion. But for English speakers, there is a relatively famous American professor of Ukrainian history. He's an expert in Ukrainian history, called Timothy Snyder. He wrote many books on Ukraine and also did a lecture series at Yale University a few years ago here, and they're all recorded and posted on YouTube. So if you search for Timothy Snyder, Ukrainian history, Yale, perhaps something like that, you will definitely find them. And yes, if you're interested in following the war, what's happening with war and politics around it and stuff like that. One popular channel done by Ukrainian is Denis Davidov. He does it all in English. Yeah, I think he's based in Switzerland, but yeah, he definitely is a strong supporter of Ukraine, and he does a pretty good coverage of it on a daily basis of what's happening. So yeah, his name is Denis, and D-E-N-Y-S, Davidov, D-A-V-Y-D-O-V, I think. Yes, and yeah, there's a few others. Kings and Generals, actually, there's a good YouTube channel called Kings and Generals. It's just a very popular history channel. They do fantastic documentaries on world history, and they've done quite a few videos on Ukraine and Ukrainian history. So I do recommend them, actually. They do good animated series, and they just do a very thorough, good take on Ukrainian history. And yeah, there is a few others, English-American YouTubers. One is called Joe Bro, B-R-O-E, Bro. He's a big supporter of Ukraine, and he does, I think, daily updates as well on what's happening. Yeah, so that's just some of the people that I would recommend.
You're wearing a beautiful vyshivanka, and I've also seen your lovely Ukrainian hoodies and t-shirts. Where do you get them? If someone in New Zealand wants to buy Ukrainian clothing, gifts, or items with Ukrainian symbols, where would you recommend they look?
So there's many, many different online shops these days, I think, where you can order Ukrainian products, including clothing. So I've finally ordered these traditional Ukrainian embroidered shirts called vyshivankas. Finally ordered them a few months ago after years of wanting to do it, but not finding time. And I found this website called svarga.com, I think, or svarga.co.ua. But if you look online for Svarga, it's S-V-A-R-G-A. Then you can look at their collection of embroidered clothing, and it's very easy to order from them online. I ended up actually doing it over WhatsApp because it was a little bit challenging because they required a Ukrainian phone number and I didn't have one. So I ended up contacting them through their website, and they said that they could just take my order over WhatsApp. And so we just chatted on WhatsApp. I gave them my address and transferred money via PayPal. And Yeah, and they received the Vishvankas within a couple of weeks. So yeah, that's one way to do it. Also, like, there's lots of Ukrainian products on Etsy. Everybody knows Etsy, so that's an easy way to procure anything Ukrainian. Yeah, as long as you know how to use Google, it's pretty easy to find Ukrainian stuff. And actually, it's surprisingly efficient how quickly you can get stuff from Ukraine, considering they're in the full-scale war. But there's still, you know, you can just buy stuff online and they post it to you. And it's quite easy. It's quite straightforward, really. Another documentary series I can recommend that you can find on YouTube, it's called What is the Difference? Documentary Cycle, The Last War. So they have several documentaries and they are all done in English with English dubbing or in English, in the English narration. I found them quite good, but I think they are more for people that already know a little bit about Ukraine and Russia and the history between them. So they sort of focus more on the recent history, Ukraine's independence, so since the collapse of Soviet Union, and how Ukraine sort of fell under more influence of Russia over the years, how Russia kind of infiltrated a lot of Ukraine's cultural and political sectors, sort of everything like preamble to the full-scale invasion, how it all came about, but also just cultural war, I guess, cultural difference between Ukraine and Russia and how a lot of that narratives get politicized and used against Ukraine. So yeah, I found it to be very interesting and I recommend it to people who are interested to learn about it in more depth.
And of course, that's also a great way to support Ukrainians and Ukrainian businesses. By the way, are you teaching your partner and your son Ukrainian?
Yes, so I speak to my son Ukrainian as much as I can. I do want him to grow up to be a bilingual child, so hopefully he will definitely speak good English, but hopefully he will know some Ukrainian as he grows up as well. And my partner, yeah, he does know a few words in Ukrainian. He's Kiwi, but he's one of those people, he's very talented in so many different things, but he says that he's never had a knack for languages, so it's quite hard for him to actually learn different languages, words in different languages and remember them, but he has learned a few. He's very good at saying Slava Ukraini, so he knows that it's a very important slogan in Ukrainian, glory to Ukraine. And yeah, he knows words like, he knows how to say I love you in Ukrainian and thank you, things like that.
Will you take your son to Ukraine when he's older?
Yes, I would love to do that. I just want to add briefly to the previous question is that my partner also learned Oyo Luzi, which is a very famous Ukrainian song. It's kind of like a second hymn or anthem of Ukraine, which became very popular at the beginning of the full-scale invasion for its moral support. Yes, so he made an effort to learn the first verse of that song, which is amazing, and we've been singing it to our son together. I would love to visit Ukraine with my son and with my partner at some point, for sure. I would love to show him my home city. I would love to visit Kyiv and Lviv and a few other places, actually. So, yeah, I just hope that it's going to be safe enough to do that when he grows up. But yeah, who knows where we're going to be in 5 to 10 years, eh? I want him to be old enough to remember it consciously, you know. I don't want him to be so young that he doesn't remember. So probably when he's in his early teens would be the best time to visit Ukraine.
Thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing such personal stories with us.
Thank you for having me, and if you're in Dunedin, come say hi to us at the Octagon in the center of Dunedin, the central square in Dunedin. Every Saturday at midday, we're there, you will see Ukrainian flags. Come say hi and show your support. And yeah, just don't forget about Ukraine. One point that I like to make to people is don't call it a war in Ukraine. It's a Russian-Ukrainian war, it's a Russo-Ukrainian war, it's a Russian invasion of Ukraine, because many people call it war in Ukraine, and it completely omits the country that, a country aggressor, the country that invaded, that started this whole thing. So let's not forget about Russia's part and Russia's responsibility in all of it. So yeah, if you do speak about this war, think about this war, think about it as a Russian invasion of Ukraine or Russo-Ukrainian war, which is probably how it's going to be known in the future. Yeah, and just keep on talking about it, keep learning about it. There's a wealth, a huge wealth of resources on YouTube and elsewhere about this war, about history of Ukraine, about history of Russia as well. So if you want to get some perspective as to how this war came about, there's so many resources to help you understand. Thank you.
Maria, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you for your openness and for sharing such a personal story. And thank you for everything you do to support Ukraine and the Ukrainian community here in New Zealand. I truly hope that one day you will be able to show your son Ukraine you want him to see, free, peaceful, and independent. And to all our listeners, thank you for joining us today. Be mindful of the information you read and share, and remember, the best way to understand a country is through its people. Take care and see you next time. Thank you for tuning in to Borscht Club on ORFM. Stay connected with us and listen to our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and oar.org.nz. This is your host Оля Вязенко, wishing you joy and a delicious day ahead. До зустрічі! See you next time!
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.